You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
It's fucked.
Yeah, it is.
The Wire.
Early this week, the new government officially confirmed it will be scrapping the Fair Pay Agreement. This is an agreement that was started by the Labour government in 2022 to bring employers and unions together for better pay. Last week, I spoke with Air 2 director Matt Danaher about the reasoning behind this government scrapping the agreement and how unions are feeling about it. We also spoke about marginalised impact on women, Māori and Pacifica, and how these groups might be impacted as a result of this change. First off, can you explain to us what the Fair Pay Agreement is?
Well, essentially, it was a hard fought for by thousands of workers way in which people in sectors where it's traditionally quite hard to negotiate for collective employment agreements for a variety of reasons, including sort of an atomized, scattered workforce and an inability to negotiate with a single employer who may then have to go and negotiate for their own contracts to deliver workers to a client when they're competing against multiple other employers where maybe there are no collective employment agreements. It's very hard for them as employers to actually offer significant pay rises, even if the workers within themselves are quite well organised with their unions, because if they do go and agree to decent pay rates, then they'll be undercut when they're bidding for contracts by companies which don't deal with unions well. So essentially, fair pay agreements were a way of enabling the workforces to negotiate with an industry as a whole. So, for instance, in cleaning or security, or bus drivers or supermarkets, workers would be able to negotiate with a representative group of employers, set minimum terms and conditions, including wages, stuff around health and safety, career progression, training, provision of breaks, all sorts of things. And then once they'd negotiated that, it would become law, and that would be legally enforceable like any other law. And any employer, who employed workers of that type, whether they chose to sign up to it or not, would be compelled to comply with it, just like with minimum wage legislation.
And what have been the outcomes of the FPA so far? What changes has it brought?
Well, at the moment, we've only just started negotiating the first couple, or we're not even at the negotiating stage for most of them. So, unfortunately, this government's decided to come in and not even wait and see whether any of them work out for workers and employers, but actually just say, nope, we don't agree with workers having the right to do this, so we're just going to scrap it. And what that's doing is essentially confining many of these workers to what are, in effect, minimum wage jobs. Often, in the case of security guards and cleaners, they're working 60 hours a week to just about break even and provide a bit of a living. But it's pretty sad for a lot of our members who are cleaners in shopping malls, for instance, or security guards in shopping malls, who are seeing all these customers rushing around buying presents for Christmas and things like that, when they can't even afford to, you know, put food on the table at Christmas time.
And what is the government's reasoning and justification for this repeal?
Well, they say that it won't have any positive impacts on productivity and it'll be too expensive for employers. But what they're doing is, you know, we're talking about 300,000 workers here across all of the sectors which we were looking forward to be able to negotiate fair pay agreements in, most of whom are women, are Māori, are Pacifica, and a lot of young workers as well.
Now, as you sort of indicated, one of the arguments that has been commonly used to justify not just this repeal, but many others, is the idea that it is a form of wasteful spending from the former government, and it has not made its intended change. However, in the case of this repeal, the agreement came in force in 2022. Is it fair to criticize its progress after less than 2 years?
Exactly. Well, no, it's not. Because, you know, for all the reasons why it's taken so long to get around the table have been for all sorts of reasons. None of them can be laid at the door of the government, actually. It naturally takes time to initiate, to negotiate for fair pay agreements. You need either 1,000 workers or 10% of the workforce to get together. Then you need to get all of the employers together. And the employers need to be able to form their bargaining side. And sometimes there can be thousands of employers in a single industry. And, you know, those kind of things just naturally take time. And yes, they take some resources as well. But ultimately, the idea is at the end of it, you end up with a system that not only benefits the workers, but actually benefits those employers that do want to do the right thing. You know, in the run-up to trying to get fair pay agreements, we had lots of employers that we deal with who say, look, we would love to give you, pay you the living wage. We'd love to be able to have more people paid based on their qualifications, but we simply can't because there's all these other operators out there currently that just employ people on the minimum wage and then can bid for these contracts with their clients at a lower price.
Now, you mentioned Women Māori and Pacifica. What has been the impact on them as a result of this agreement?
Well, it means that they're having one of the best chances they've had in years of actually getting some control over their work and getting their voices heard, getting the ability to actually influence decisions that affect their day-to-day lives around wages, around terms and conditions, health and safety, and so on. You know, they basically, they're not going to be able to do it. The impact is that this hope they had set out in front of them, that, you know, a way out of poverty, out of poverty wages, has just been swept away from under them. That's the human cost of what is, frankly, from this government, simply an ideological approach. You know, rather than looking at what works, allowing things to be trialled and see whether they can actually deliver gains for everyone or for as many people as possible, including employers or including the good employers. No, they just said, no, we just don't agree with it. We're just sweeping it away without even giving it a chance to have a go. And I think you know, you have to ask yourself when you look at some of the other policies of this government, do they care about those type of people?
Now, lastly, the new government has campaigned on easing the cost of living. What does this decision say about their commitment to make life financially easier for all Kiwis?
I think it shows it to be a lie, frankly. I think just like their, you know, their tax figures during the election campaign, which were also found out, where they claimed that, you know, the average Kiwi family was going to get X amount of dollars tax cut a week instead of actually the top sort of 1% of families. They're showing that actually they don't intend to deliver for low-paid, hard-working Kiwis.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I think it's important to remember that whatever happens with this, people working in these jobs, the cleaners, the security guards, and the other occupations, they are not going to stop fighting to try and improve their conditions at work and trying to improve their wages. There will be other ways forward, but that's not to say this is not a significant setback for them, because it is.
That was ETU Director Matt Danaher talking about this government's decision to scrap the fair pay agreement and the impact this will have on working Kiwis, Māori women and Pacifica. We'll be right back after this short break. Keep it on the beat.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.